Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
There you are, there you are in my head. Don't fill me up with regret. Crawling through the vastness of space. If there's a will, there's a way, there's a way.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. This is episode 146 of our little podcast talking about MTV's Teen Wolf. We are underway recapping, reviewing, reacting to the final season of Teen Wolf, Teen Wolf 6B, which started last week and is continuing this week. So we're up to episode 612, which is called Raw Talent. So getting underway with this final 10 episode arc. I am one of your hosts, Natalie. I'm joined by our beautiful co-host, Karen. And we are going to talk about Teen Wolf again, as we have been doing for nearly 5 years on this podcast. So if you would like to talk to us about Teen Wolf as well, you can reach out to us on one of our social media accounts or email. So our social media is NATW Podcast. It's that handle on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Some of those sites see more action than others, but we are trying to get some hashtag content up around on those places. Twitter is certainly the most active. We're live, you know, live tweeting the episodes and all of that kind of stuff. So you'll also see a little bit of non-Teen Wolf stuff there because we do have another podcast under this hashtag brand called Not About the Weather, which is a general interest podcast. So you might see some things there that are not about Teen Wolf, but that's okay because not everything in the world is about one thing. Sometimes people have more than one interest. It's okay.
I don't like this idea.
What? That people can like more than one thing?
Yeah, it's Teen Wolf or nothing, Natalie.
Okay, all right. Well, you're kicked off the other podcast. That's fine.
Ouch.
No more Atomic Blonde chat for you. So,
and take it back.
Okay. So, you can always email us at natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can tumble ask us on notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com, which is our full website where we have our episode posts and is a Tumblr-hosted site, so you can follow that like Tumblr or message us there. Or we're also a Hyperbole-hosted podcast, so you can comment on the Hyperbole page of the podcast post there or any Teen Wolf articles that Karen happens to write. So that is a thing that you can do to reach out and talk about Teen Wolf, and we can respond to your questions if you have any. So that is what we are. How are you feeling this week, Karen?
Pretty good, pretty good. Mom's in town. Very excited about that. She saw my tattoo and actually liked it. So feeling great.
Oh, good. That's good. I'm happy for you.
She was hesitant. She was like, when I texted her a picture of it, she was like, wow, you actually got it. I was like, yeah, I told you I was going to get it. Why are you surprised?
It's very small. It's
yes.
Not such a big thing. But
well, she was like, yeah. It's bigger than I thought it would be. Like, it's bigger than it is on the show because she watches Teen Wolf too. And I was like, yeah, we did that on purpose. It's fine. She likes it though.
Oh, that's good. I'm happy. I'm happy for her and you and me and us. Yeah. So as per usual or kind of usual, we have our, before we get started, we have our favorite quotes from the episodes, from the episode that we just watched, Raw Talent. Karen stole mine, so I'm going to have a little think. So Karen, do you want to go ahead with your standout quotable moment from the episode?
Yes. This was not only the quote, but what was actually going on in the scene. It's when Mason and Liam are talking in the locker room, and they're just getting ready to go out and practice with the freshmen. And Mason, Liam picks Mason up to carry him out of the locker room, which is just hilarious all on its own. But Mason goes, "Go Cyclones, go lacrosse, yay, sports." And I was just like, oh, Mason, I've never connected with you as much as I have right in this moment.
Yay, sports. For real. Yeah. I mean, it's very accurate to me, my life. good for him. You know, he's trying.
Yeah. And I love that, like, I mean, not every character on the show plays sports, but it's always been like Scott and Styles. Now we've got Liam and like the core group, and even Kira was on the sports team and Jackson and all that. But like Mason just doesn't really care. Corey's on the team. You know, he cares because his boyfriend's on the team and his best friend's on the team. But like, he doesn't really get the sports thing. And that's really refreshing to me on the show.
Yeah, it is. Is he the first one that hasn't been involved? I mean, Lydia, I guess, like, was like the trophy girlfriend with Jackson.
Yeah, originally. She was like into it. I mean, even Allison was kind of into it.
I feel like Allison was maybe just a supportive friend. I mean, Mason's also a supportive friend, but it's a little different. I don't know. It's fun. It's a good dynamic.
I love it. They're great.
So the only other bit of dialogue that I like literally wrote down word for word was actually Dr. Fenris when he is killing all of the, just to lower the tone, when he's killing all of the supernatural beings in Icon House, and he says, "I can't be afraid anymore." Well, I thought the delivery was really great. And I also think it's kind of a bit of a telling story of what's going on. I think some of what we're going to talk about is the, like we said, the fear gas situation. Mm-hmm. And that mentality is a solution. Like, I have to take this action because I can't live like this. Like, I have to eliminate the cause of my fears because I can't live like this is kind of, again, going down the same metaphorical route as what you were talking about last week with the hunter, the new hunter. So in terms of civilian action and why people react the way they do to things. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the counselor says that again in this episode, something similar to it. We should start calling her like Miss Monroe or something like that, because that actually is her name in the show rather than the counselor. Miss Monroe says something close to that I want to talk about later too, because that is definitely a thing that they're a thread that they keep navigating through this story. All right, shall we jump off into the discussion now?
Yeah.
Even though I don't want to talk about this first part because it makes me so sad.
I love it so much.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, so the episode, of course, opens up on Theo, and Theo's in his truck, which is basically, you know, the only thing he has anymore. And he's sleeping all over Beacon Hills, and he keeps getting woken up by the cops and having to move. He's obviously getting very frustrated.
Might not even be just Beacon Hills. Though, no, I think it's like literally all over the country, can I just interrupt and say, because those cops and security guards, and they all had like different uniforms. Like Beacon Hills is a small town. Sorry to like nitpick, but Beacon Hills is a small town. Sheriff knows Theo. The police all have the same uniform. And yes, this could have been like a mall security, you know, a ranger and stuff like that. I think this is at least all over the state, if not all over the country.
I'm going to say all over the state or even like the towns around Beacon Hills. I don't think he's going very far. I don't think that it's quite got a reach of all over the country. Because we do see him, I mean, maybe that's just where he was that night, but we do see him go into the vet's office, so.
Yeah, because he ends up in the vet's office, I understand, because he's come back to there. But
But yeah, you're probably right. It probably reaches further than Beacon Hills. But either way, it's so sad. that this is what's happening to him. And I know Theo's kind of a dick, but like, I feel like he's trying and he's proven that he's willing to be one of the good guys. And it was just,
yeah,
it was a great cold open.
Yes, this is meant to be, you know, quite sympathetic. So
yeah,
I'm
definitely,
you know, and they didn't just bring Cody to Comic-Con and all of that just to have it like
end this way.
You know, yeah, like, oh yeah, he's done. Like, you know, one scene which he has like no dialogue and then he's dead. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So how was it filming for that day?
Wow.
Cool. Yeah, he's gonna be, I mean, we saw him in the trailer too, like he's gonna be back, so that'll be interesting. But the interesting part of this scene, other than just the feeling sadness for Theo, is that we see a spider crawl onto his skin and down into his skin, and he has to go into the vet's office to kill it. And I mean, Theo's a pretty smart guy, and I feel like a lot of other characters would have just freaked out, whereas like he kind of goes right into action and knows what he's doing. And he stabs it with the scalpel, and then when he pulls it out, the spider explodes into black smoke. And I know, Natalie, you had a lot of questions last time about
this
whether or not this stuff is real.
Yes, because, like, when the wolves died and they all saw that bug explosion, like, was that, like, but what is real? Because it was real, but then it disappeared. Or did he hallucinate the whole thing? Did he stab something that was really there or not? Like, because we literally saw it. It's certainly some sort of phantom because it went up in a puff of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But was it physically, was it a physical item that exploded in a puff of smoke, or was it like in his head the whole time? Like, and then is it a bogger? Like, I don't understand.
I don't think that it's a phantom. I think it's really there, but it exploded into smoke. I think that it has a physical effect on people, but that it's not necessarily a real spider, or maybe it's, you know, a supernatural kind of spider or something.
I don't know. It's confusing.
It's kind of weird. But he decides not to call Scott, which I think is understandable because he and Scott aren't in the best place right now. Most of the pack doesn't like Theo, but he really should have called Scott. And then as he's still debating this, he's surrounded by hunters and they open fire on him, which was really sad. But again, we kind of know he's going to be coming back, so I don't think this is the end.
Well, was this really a bunch of hunters firing on him, or was it a Scott-like hallucination? I actually thought it was real, but now I'm like, what?
We can't trust anything. But, I mean, that's a good point, because in the next scene, Scott's having, like, flashbacks to season one hunters, and at one point, he thinks he's surrounded by a bunch of hunters with the red laser beams and everything, and he ends up accidentally attacking the sheriff, you know? So, something is messing with all of their minds, so maybe it wasn't quite as bad as it looked for Theo, but something still must have happened.
Yes, I think that there was something, and he might have either, it was either genuinely what we saw, or yes, he's having a funny reaction to something.
What I loved about this scene, though, is that one of the deputies says, "What's wrong with his eyes?" I mean, they're really like...
To Theo or to Scott?
To Scott.
That was Scott. Yeah.
To Scott. And they're really pushing this. They're really going to do it. The townspeople recognize,
they get him outed,
they recognize that something is going on here with everybody, and I think that's so fascinating. I'm really glad they're doing this plot line.
Well, like we said, I don't know how they would have ended on something else in terms of, like, would it just been like, oh, we've covered up the big secret forever? So I feel like it had to get addressed, and you know, the last season is maybe the right place to do it. And because I don't know what the pacing of the show would have been like if we'd had them like outed for like several seasons.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what the status quo of the town would have been if we'd had several seasons. this is the right place for it, basically.
Yeah.
However, it's still very stressful.
It is. Yeah, it is. But it feels right. And again, like, I'm really glad that they're doing this. But this clearly isn't going to be the only plot line of the season. We still have to deal with whatever came out of the Wild Hunt with them. And Mason kind of points out, like, it's a mythical creature so powerful that the only safe place to put it was in the Wild Hunt. Like, they're in trouble if this thing has escaped. So it's something that they're clearly going to have to focus on. And Lydia is still thinking about her vision from earlier, and she's trying to figure out where the beep came from that she heard. And she kind of clues in on it, and Parrish is just like, don't say it. And she goes, Eichenhaus. And I still feel so much chemistry between these two characters.
I think they're really good.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, I love, you know, Stydia. I love Scott and Lydia as well. And, you know, everybody on the show could go with anybody, really, and I would probably be happy. But
there's something interesting there. I don't know. Yeah.
I think part of it is because the dynamic is switched. Lydia is very much the person who's like the more dominant personality, and Parrish just looks up to her with these puppy dog eyes. And I really like that, because obviously that's not usual. And considering, like, he's a cop and everything too, you'd think he would be the one protecting her, and he tries, but like, she saves him in the end. So that's pretty cool. And their story is really
Funny friendship.
Like, yeah. And their story is still really unexplored. So, like, I want more of that.
Yeah. I am I feel very conflicted. I feel like, do you feel like if Styles saw their relationship, he would be uncomfortable? Not that I want to be like, oh, traditional relationship rules and blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever. They can do whatever they want. But, like, do you think that, like, in the standard society, no, oh, men and women can't be friends. They can, and it's fine, and I would be, like, super happy with this friendship. But, like, given what we know about, like, their history and their dynamic, like, do you think everyone is, like, chill with Lydia and Parrish? Like, oh, yeah, they just have this weird thing that we don't know about, or that we don't really, like, get in on? Or do you think he would be like, I don't like you being with my girlfriend like that?
I don't think he would have a problem with it, because they do have a connection, Lydia and Parrish, but Styles and Lydia have been through so much over the years, and they have gotten so close. Like, at this point, I think Styles is cool. I think he's comfortable, and I think he knows what he has with Lydia is something very unique and special.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, I would think so. I don't think this show would ever make a thing of it, like, the way that, you know, maybe a real life, you know, society would. But yeah, I just, Scott and Lydia, whatever. I know, like, well, some people really like that. I would have enjoyed that in a different way as well. But, like, as soon as Parrish and Lydia came back on screen together, I was like, oh, yeah, she's dating Styles. This is awkward, because this is, feels like we're back in the plot of them kind of having a thing, if you know what I mean. Oh, yeah, she has a boyfriend off screen. Like, oh, okay. I mean, this show has had a lot of different dynamics that mean a lot of different things, you know, like, that aren't necessarily romance. But I was very much like, wow, okay, this is fiery.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, Parrish does try to save her the trouble of going back to Eichenhaus, which is definitely something I want to talk about in a minute. But he goes there and he threatens Fenris to open the gate because they hear somebody calling out from down at the end of the hallway. And Fenris does let him through. And Parrish finds a bunch of patients in the bathroom. And there's, like, a wire that came down, and it's shocking him. I believe they're pretty much, most of them are dead, but one is still alive. And she says, there's something in here. And that's really interesting to me, because we learn later that Fenris is the one that put them in there. That he tried to kill them all. He did kill them all. Mm-hmm. But clearly there's something else in the air or in Eichen House or something like that, where she's still afraid. It wasn't just Fenris. And I wonder if this is an actual being. I mean, we see the spiders later when Lydia comes through.
Yeah, definitely not a fan of this situation. But yeah, I think it's the same as, like, well, the rats, you know, like Halwyn going there, you know, Halwyn came through hunting whatever that thing was, and then the rats all freaked out and, you know, hurt themselves, killed themselves. And then, like, I have theories here that involve, like, what we learn later about Halwyn. Because my theories are, like, whatever the thing is might have also been there. But then we also have this theory that it's a thing that came back from Stiles, or, you know, like, or from the other realm. So I have theories about Eichen House, and maybe it's, like, why Eichen House was going to be so, was so screwed up in the first place. Maybe we're looking at, maybe we're going back, like, we're doing a cyclical, the big tie-in of this thing is, like, whatever happened before. So whatever's happening now has happened before. And oh my god, and there's so much, because you remember the book and the book of Valak, and I was like, and he'd seen it happen before.
Yeah,
with the, well, you know, with the ghost,
the dread doctor,
dread doctors. And then they ended up kind of tied to the Wild Hunt. Maybe they've sewed all these pieces together, and we were like, we never found out what happened the first time. Maybe there's been something cyclical happening, and, like, that's why Eichen House is so screwed up, and then it's all going to be, like, part of the same story. I don't know.
That would be cool. Sorry,
that was kind of a messy explanation of that, but, like,
Eichen House clearly has an important presence here, and has in Teen Wolf since it kind of came up. So I like that they keep going back to it. And I think that whatever is going on in Eichen House, it's not a normal place, not just because they have supernatural creatures in there, but because of all the history and the violence and all of that, something else is going on. So I don't know if it's necessarily a place that this creature is targeting, or if Eichen House is sort of becoming its own thing, kind of, and drawing something there, which is also possible. But either way, Fenris did try to kill everybody, and he zaps Parrish, and he puts him in the cold chamber. And this is when Fenris says, and like you were saying before, he has this kind of mentality that, I realized we shouldn't be caging them, talking about the supernatural creatures. We should be killing them. And it's because he's so afraid of them, and he wants to protect himself, and he wants to protect the other humans out there. And again, like, I think this is very on the nose for Teen Wolf, because a lot of people feel the same way in America right now about immigrants. I mean, not quite to this extent right now, but there's a lot of fear out there of people unlike yourself, and they think it would be better to ship them off, you know, to keep them out because it's safer that way. But once you allow yourself to do something like that, going the next step doesn't seem like that big of a deal, and it could lead down a very dark, dark path. So I'm kind of sad because, I mean, Fenris has never really been, like, a great guy, but he's never...
Well, he's ups and downs.
Yeah.
I had hope. I had hope for him.
So did I. But again, there's all this fear in the air, so I think that's just compounding how he already feels. So this isn't necessarily who he is. Like, this might be, these might be feelings buried deep within him that he's never acted upon before, but now that he's got, you know, the fear gas in the air, he is acting upon them.
I don't know. I kind of thought that he'd be more sympathetic, given that he was so, like, happy to discover werewolves, you know?
Yeah.
Fenris has been really up and down, and I don't know if I had, like, any hopes and dreams for him, you know, but I would have thought that he'd seen enough to know that, you know, monsters aren't monstrous. Like, he's a doctor. He's not, like, a crazy jailer, you know, like, I thought that he was kind of helping these people, but clearly he is has some hidden fears that are now being acted upon, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Well, luckily for Parrish, Lydia shows up. She hears Fenris locking him up over the radio, which is pretty cool, and she goes to Eichenhaus and saves him. But what really stands out to me here is that the show isn't forgetting that Lydia was locked up in there for so long. You know, she feels a lot of mental trauma being back there. She keeps getting flashbacks. And she's terrified, and the fact that she goes after Parrish anyway is really awesome. But, you know, she was tortured there, and mentally and physically. And for her to step back in that place took a lot of strength. And I'm glad that she was able to push through that in order to save Parrish.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it was a great moment. I have some questions about the hearing stuff on the radio. Do you think that's, hang on, was that in reality or was that in her psychic powers? She heard it over his legitimate radio at the police station?
I think that was psychic powers.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was psychic powers as well, but then I was like, because she was at the, she spoke to him at the station, so it's all very muddling. She definitely used her powers, you know, as a defensive or offensive weapon, right in the nick of time. And again, like that, it's sort of been a very long time coming. Eichen was the place where she learned to start doing that. Like, obviously most of the memories there are very bad, but I guess some were useful, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she was keen to go back. Jordan was the, not keen, but she didn't show any fear about going back, I think, or at least not vocally. So
I think she showed fear, but I think her determination to find Parrish, knowing that something was wrong, far outweighed that. And she was definitely willing to go through whatever it took in order to save him. Switching gears for a minute, let's go back to lacrosse because, of course, we get Liam and Brett practicing to help the freshmen before they jump into the first part of the season. And I just, like, Brett, I don't know, I could give or take Brett. Like, he's fine. I actually really liked him in this episode, though. I thought he was pretty good. And Liam's comment about, just remember to cover your back, especially if your opponent's a dick, was really funny. Because Brett is pushing him really hard.
I was kind of like, what's going on? Is he actually helping? Like, what's meant to be happening right now?
I think Liam has a problem with covering up the stuff that's actually wrong and kind of ignoring it. You know, he is also a fan of ignoring something until it just goes away. And Brett's showing him, look, you're not in control. And he's proving to him he's not in control. And by doing that, he's trying to help him and be like, hey, like, get your shit together. And
I
think there could have been a better way for Brett to do it. But, like, you know, everyone has their own style of teaching. And this happens to be Brett. But he also has a good point because he says, you've got big shoes to fill when it comes to Scott. And in that moment, he's specifically talking about lacrosse captain.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on, guys. It's just lacrosse. But no, it's not just lacrosse, of course.
Yeah, it's never just lacrosse because Liam will be stepping into Scott's shoes as the alpha of Beacon Hills or the protector of Beacon Hills. So Liam really does have to learn how to not only control his abilities, but accept that fact, the fact that he's going to be the leader now. And I kind of like that he's not being cocky about it, honestly, because when we first met Liam, he was a pretty cocky dude. And I think the fact that he's afraid shows how much he doesn't want to mess this up. And I like that versus him being cocky and doing something wrong and regretting whatever happens.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic, you know, boys who are friends that never really got along, like, just like with Brett and Liam, because they're technically friends or at peace or okay. Brett agreed to come and help, but like I'm also kind of imagining, like, if this had been like a different era, like Scott like maybe Scott and Jackson or something like right. that. Like if Scott and Jackson had ever got to that point, basically like past Jackson's issues. And I don't know, I do enjoy it, but I don't know. I still don't know if I would have made Liam the leader. Like just because he was the first person Scott bit doesn't like, is that how it works? It's just like first come, first served for being leader of Beacon Hills. I feel like especially within a wolf pack, like especially realistic with like alpha dynamics, that there are people who are fit for that kind of thing and people who are not fit for that kind of thing. And maybe Liam is not. Like, I know that they're kind of forcing it on us. I know that that is where it's going. I do think the show is doing it. I just don't know if that's what I would have done. I would have been maybe, hey, like, regardless of, like, Hayden, like, regardless of the actress's personal commitments and why she's not on the show, maybe she would have been a better personality to be the pack leader, if you know what I mean. Like, the pack right. leaders are not just, like, first come, first serve. It takes certain dynamics. And I don't know if that's Liam. Like, I just, like, I understand what they're doing on the show. I just don't know, like, in a slightly more, like, personality-based, realism-based, science-based, like animal-based idea. I just don't know if that would actually be him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
But it's what we're doing. But
it's what we're getting.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like, you know, like Scott wasn't there. Like he's the second in command because he's Scott's first true beta and for whatever other reasons. In terms of just like natural power dynamics in a group, I don't think that's Liam. So shrug, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. But shout out to my second favorite line of the episode when Brett tackles, or no, I think he just throws the ball really hard at Corey's chest and gets knocked over. And Corey just goes, "I'm not actually invisible right now, am I?" He's so cute, and I love that this is a running joke now.
He's good value. I'm liking it.
He's great. Luckily though, we do get some action coming up other than lacrosse action, and right now it's Chris returns, and Chris is selling some guns to some Marines. And at least he thinks he is, but they're actually probably like the wannabe hunters that are roaming around town right now. And he realizes pretty quickly that these guys are not who they say they are. And he's got a whole thing in place to, you know, take care of the situation. And then Scott and Malia show up, try to save the day.
Can you imagine being like a fake guerrilla military dude trying to do an underground gun deal and like some 15-year-old girl busts in, or not 15, she's like 18, but you know, like some teenage girl busts in and was like, "I'm here to save the day." Like, can you just imagine like someone who just didn't know what the hell was going on, because
they'd be so confused.
Because this is also, Chris was not necessarily, because this is, I think this is just the black market. This isn't the hunter world. Like this is like, because Chris is out of that. I don't think he was selling to hunters. I think he was just selling to the black market.
Well, no, he was hoping he was selling to legitimate sources. They weren't legitimate sources. I think because there are so many hunters roaming around right now that the illegitimate source is actually hunters. I don't think he knows
Yes. Because he's trying to be a legitimate.
Yeah. But I don't know. But yeah, it was pretty funny when they come in and he's like, "I had a guy on the inside." And they're like, "Who?" And he goes, "You're standing on him." Whoops. And then all hell breaks loose and there's a lot of bullets flying and a lot of beating people up. But they end up taking out, well, they kind of take out the guys. They escape, basically. The one throws like a bomb thing of some sort and runs away, so they don't actually get to track him down. But the reason why Scott and Malia are there is because they have the bullet casing and the one with the fleur-de-lis stamped on it, and they want to know whose it is. And Chris says, "I haven't stamped a bullet since Allison died." Oh, which is really sad. And Chris's password
Allison. It's also Allison.
Throwback. Yeah, another great throwback. But man, that gave me so many feelings. But I love that the show keeps bringing this up because, like, he would never forget that Allison died. He would think about her all the time. His life would, you know, center around trying to make her proud and doing what she would be happy with him doing. And, you know, bringing this up time and time again just feels so realistic to me. So I'm glad they keep doing these callbacks.
Yeah. Again, it's something that, like, and Scott mentions her a couple of times in this episode. Like, I feel like the natural conversation, like, should be, you know, quite directed. Not quite directed to her, but, like, you know, it's been like a year and a half maybe in real time. And either you'd be like so depressed that you'd like pretend she never existed, or you would normalize her memory and like talk about it all the time, you know, like talk about her all the time. And Scott mentions, you know, later, like, you know, his girlfriend's dad, like Chris, because they're with Chris all the time. So that's like a different thing. But like, you know, Scott mentions dating her, you know, later in the episode. And yeah, I feel like it is going to be more present, as I said, than the television show allows it to be. Like, in reality, like, something like that would be more present than maybe the TV writing allows it to be, because we have to, like, move on to a new story. But realistically, you'd kind of still be stuck on that for quite a while if that had happened to you in your group in high school.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Scott did drop the bullet casings, so they have to go out and look for the slug, which will hopefully tell them who had this bullet. And of course, we already know that it was Miss Monroe, the counselor, and she's out there right now, and she tosses a ball covered in wolfsbane to Brett. And she's all nonchalant about it, and he thinks everything's fine until, bam, he, you know, falls over because of the wolfsbane. And her big thing, and this is another big one that I wanted to talk about that kind of ties in with the whole Fenris thing, is she goes, you don't deserve to have this much power. You don't deserve to terrify people.
She was, and the way that she was like, when he started to heal about, like, she was like, oh, so amazing. Like, I was just like, what is wrong with this person? Like,
I don't think she's ever seen it up close before.
It was so weird, Karen. I was like, what is with this? Like, what is she in this for? Like, what is, how did she find out about it? Like,
I want to know her story.
Yeah, like, and then she's kind of like half a man. Is it like big game hunting? Like, oh my God, lion is so majestic. I must honor it by killing it. You know what I mean? Like,
it kind of had that feel to it, honestly.
It's really weird.
Because she's fascinated, but she also is terrified.
Who does deserve to have the power? Does she think that, like, some people are going to use that for good? Because, spoiler alert, like, they already are. So what the hell is this about?
That's the thing. Like, and it's so obvious to me that this is a metaphor for something else. But yeah, I mean, she doesn't understand that there can be people with this much power who will do the right thing with it. And I think, I don't know, it reminds me a lot of like X-Men too. Like, there are good X-Men, there are bad X-Men, but like some people want to see all the X-Men die because they're all the mutants, because, you know, they have too much power, and how can you trust somebody with that much power? But how can you trust somebody with a gun too? Like, there's a lot of power in that, and the same power to kill somebody. And it's a whole thing, but the point is, yeah, she's making this decision herself, and she's making the decision to kill somebody else because she doesn't think that they deserve that much power. And that's playing God in a lot of ways, and I think that's gonna catch up to her.
It's the attitude is weird. It's fresh, it's new, it's not something we've necessarily seen before on the show, but it's really weird.
Yeah, but you know, they fight and he gets away, luckily enough, and obviously he'll come back in a little bit and we'll talk about that in a minute. But she's still very much inexperienced And she's gotten lucky time and time again. And for reasons we will discuss, she might end up being a little more prepared next time. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Talking about hitting the nail on the head, though, their history test the next day is on Mussolini and fear baiting in the rise of fascism.
As usual, the school curriculum very conveniently, you know.
Oh, it's so good, though.
This show, I feel like, taps more into practical applications of education than most other teen dramas, I must admit.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, you know, come to think of it, a lot of the lessons that these kids learn in school, Scott and the others, they apply them to their lives later on, because usually there's an evil teacher who's trying to kill them. And because of science and because of the curriculum, they can beat them. So they'll never lose those lessons.
I genuinely feel like there's more practical application of science in this show than any I've seen in ages. You know how much I went on about the epilepsy thing, like with Erica, like with mm-hmm. the auras and how dogs can sense auras. Like, they tie in so many random science, like biology.
Real science things.
And it's not real science, is it? But it's like there's something, like they actually kind of, their power, their supernatural world is somewhat based in scientific principles of the real natural world. And they use it a lot. I feel like other supernatural shows don't use it to this extent. Like, it's an interesting, internal mythology. Like, the existence of supernatural in this world has always been really unique and interesting one to me.
Yeah. The point of this scene, however, is not the history test the next day. That was It was a throwaway line that was definitely of interest. But what ends up happening is that Corey, Liam, and Mason find a gross dead body in the locker room. And we kind of assume from the helmet and all of that that it's the really cute guy who plays Aaron. He's so adorable. Aww. I was so upset. But later...
His new face.
Yeah, it's really gross. And it's obviously a body that we see in the trailer, and I have a lot of questions about this just because I assumed that this was like the creature, but apparently it's not the creature, which is an interesting one. We'll have to see what happens there. But they later find Aaron, but he's like a weird robot thing now. He's like acting very, very strangely because he was eaten by spiders.
So real Aaron is a robot. I mean, Aaron, what?
I know, right? Okay, so this is what I think happened. I think the dead body that they find is the real Aaron, and he is gone. I think that robot Aaron is actually full of spiders, just like maybe
he's a
the
phantom.
Wolf. Yeah.
See, and the wolf, because that's what I think as well. Like, that's what I thought about the wolf. The wolf was not a real wolf that was part of the pack. The wolf was a...
like a copy?
Phantom spider copy thing. And the spider that Theo had was a phantom spider. Uh-huh. And this Aaron is a phantom Aaron spider. Like spider Aaron.
Oh, this is so gross and creepy.
I felt like that wolf wasn't real. Or it wasn't a real wolf as part of the pack of wolves. That it was leading them to the pack of the wolves that had already died, if you know what I
mean. Why would it lead them there, though?
To freak them out? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, building up the fear more, that would make sense. Oh, I feel so bad. I mean, I kind of hope Aaron sticks around for a while just because, like, he's cute and I think he's good. But, yeah, I don't think he's real anymore.
Sorry.
That's too bad. Well, off in the woods, Malia has been trying to get Scott to talk all day about the hunters that he thought he saw because she's worried about him. And I know that for a lot of people, the Scott Malia thing is kind of sudden, but like, I'm kind of feeling it. Their chemistry is really good. And I like that they have this stuff in common of, you know, like you were mentioning before, he was chased down by his girlfriend's father and she was chased down by her father. And they've been through a lot of stuff together. And I like their friendship a lot. And I liked even the way that like he looked at her near the end of this scene and kind of smiled. And it's really sweet so far.
I'm quite a fan. I don't know. It's still to me like a friendship dynamic, but I think that again, like Scott and Lydia, Styles and Lydia are an example of like, it's not like a supercharged romance. It's more like, because they're way past that. It's not like dating someone new, you know, like
right. Someone. It's not Scott and Allison, which was a supercharged like, romance.
It's not like, oh, romance. Oh, does he know me? Is he going to return my calls? Like that kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
It's really different to go into a relationship like with a long-term friend. And Scott, you know, Styles and Lydia, for example, like while we kind of knew that they loved each other, they loved each other regardless of, you know, attraction or anything. Like that was not a question. It was more like we've said, like a partnership, a different kind of romantic relationship / agreement / dating. It's not exactly, I mean, we haven't really seen them in action. I didn't mean that like that. We haven't really seen them like in a relationship post their reunion, but maybe we will. But it's certainly, yeah, that kind of long-term feel rather than like, oh, how exciting and new. So Scott and Malia is going to be an interesting one because Styles and Lydia kind of always knew it was brewing. They knew that they were very much a set, whereas Scott and Malia are sort of more of a wider pack relation. And I don't know like what it will take to get them to start noticing like whether either of them will feel real about it or, you know, Malia in general is a difficult one with her idea of relationships. And we don't know where she's at the moment. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But the moment's cut short because Chris shows up with the laser beam that freaks them both out. And luckily he wasn't somebody else. It was just him, the friendly neighborhood hunter. And he finds the silver bullet that was embedded in the tree. And because it's a silver bullet, they know that this isn't a real hunter because a real hunter would know that silver bullets don't really kill werewolves. So everyone is aware.
It did something.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I don't know if that's because it was a bullet to the brain versus a bullet to, like, the abdomen or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can't heal from that because it killed him instantly. Yes. I feel like we talked about this before a long time ago when we were like, how does the healing work exactly? But I don't know, maybe Helen's not actually dead. Maybe it's going to take him a really long time to come back from that. That'd be cool. I don't want him to be dead yet. But this also proves to them that something else is going on in the town. Lydia comes back and tells Scott and the rest of the pack that Fenris killed every supernatural creature in the closed. And somebody asks, what is everyone afraid of? And Scott answers, us. And we saw that throughout these past two episodes with, you know, what's wrong with his eyes and them seeing Liam in the hospital. And here we kind of get a montage of kids in school moving away from Liam at the science table and lab and looking at them as they walk down the hallway. Like, they're worried about who they are, and what they're capable of. So fear really is just brewing everywhere right now.
What do you think they, like, because they did all start getting suspicious, you know, like, oh, don't want to sit next to you. Like, what have they seen? What is it just like they know those weird kids are kind of connected to that weird shit that's going on? Or like, what do you think it is at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that it's just seeing these kids showing up wherever weird things happen and wondering if they're the ones that have caused it.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's And obviously, some of them have seen things before. They don't know. Like, they know that some of them might have seen Scott, and they know that these kids were a part of that. But I don't know. It's kind of brewing.
It is. And it's definitely brewing. And there are, I think it kind of goes both ways too, because I was thinking about this a lot. When we go back out into the woods and the Miss Monroe gets attacked by Brett, I'm like, why would he do that? Like,
I know. It's I'm like, why would you just not, like, you're fine or you will be, like, freaking run away. Like,
exactly. But I was just thinking, there is fear in the air everywhere. And I think it's making people, just like the two guys in the hospital, it's making people afraid and it's making them violent. So I think instead of running away, his instincts are kicked up a notch and he's feeling like he should attack her versus actually run away. That's the only thing I can think of.
Maybe someone's putting it in the water supply, you know, like.
I thought you were going to say maybe somebody poisoned the water hole.
Yeah, for real. Like,
maybe. Yes. That would be a fair way of going about it, for sure. But Brett gets an arrow to the chest, and he does run off then. And who shows up but Gerard Argent? Just in the nick of time.
I just wanted to ask you, like, you've met him, right?
Michael, yes. Yeah. Hogan. Yeah.
And he's nice.
He is nice. It's weird though, because, like, he's terrifying on screen.
Just his face is so mean. I know. Like, the way the corners of his mouth turn down.
I know.
Like, I just can't imagine him being nice. No, sorry, he's Mr. Hogan.
Yeah. He's very nice. He's very Canadian. And we interviewed him and he was wonderful, but it's really hard not to look at him and see Gerard Argent and just want to punch him in the face, because Gerard is awful. I don't need to convince anybody of that. And I'm even more afraid now, not that Miss Monroe has been like the greatest person up until this point. I think I'm still maybe sympathetic isn't the right word, but like, I would kind of like for her to see the error of her ways and realize what she's doing. I don't think that's going to happen. But worse now, Gerard is taking her under his wing. She's the raw talent of the episode. And he's going to teach her. And he even, I'm pretty sure he was the one who wrote the message on the whiteboard in her room.
Yeah. Like he's been watching her.
Right, exactly. Opportunities multiply as they are seized. And he put the knife in her desk and everything. So, I mean, if she's getting trained by Gerard Argent, she's going to end up being quite lethal. Despite everything, like, he is a good hunter and he knows what he's doing and he's smart about it too.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess it's nice of him for giving her a chance. That's not what I wanted to say at all. I would have thought he thought that she was, like, kind of stupid and naive, if you know what I mean. Like,
right.
But I guess everyone starts somewhere.
Yeah,
and get into this without growing up in it, you know.
Exactly. And he sees the potential. So, but if she's never come across them before, how did she get the Fleur de Lis bullet?
That is a good question.
Unless, like, she found it off the black market, somehow it's been getting passed around.
Yeah, but it's a silver bullet. They didn't make silver bullets for sale. They know that silver bullets work. They made those special silver bullets for, like, the Oni, you know, like, and they made the special silver bullet to, you know, to prove you're a hunter, that you've come, you know, they had to forge it, like, oh, you've come through your hunting training now, so you've graduated. So how did she get someone's graduation bullet?
Ooh.
If that's what it is. Question. Maybe yeah. I'm remembering more canon than the writer of this episode did. I don't know.
She either could have done that or potentially.
I mean, they call it out in the course of the episode that, oh, that's like a real hunter wouldn't do that. Like, that's not a bullet that a real hunter would use.
Right.
So if it is an Argent, then the show knows that this is one of the Argent's ceremonial bullets.
Yeah, they're going to have to address where she got that from at some point, because that is very clearly the Argent symbol.
Yeah. Maybe she like found their bunker and managed to break. It was just been taking stuff and she just got it from the safe, you know, where Chris used to keep it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe it's Kate. Maybe it's Kate's graduation.
Ooh.
Maybe Kate's like secretly put her on the case or I don't
know. That would be weird considering what Kate is now. But, you know, then again, who knows? Could be anybody. But I am interested to see how this plays out. I've been wanting Gerard to get his comeuppance for quite a long time. And I feel like this is finally maybe when it's going to happen. So hashtag please kill Gerard Argent.
I suppose, yep.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Hopefully. Well, that wraps up the discussion. I know you had some feedback you wanted to discuss.
Well, kind of, yes. Yeah. So let me just get this up because, all right. So one thing that obviously is a bit different about what we're doing, and I just sort of want to give transparency about this because it explains something, but without being like a dick about it. Like, it is a very common practice that people from media outlets of our size or smaller or bigger get advanced screeners of television to create content for it to come out right when it arrives. So, like, you know, advanced episodes of to do reviews or features or podcasts. So we're watching Teen Wolf ahead of it airing. And we have done that for the past couple of seasons. Sometimes it's only been one episode a season, like the premiere will come out or the episode 3 or some random one will be like, oh, advanced tease. The last couple of years, we've been getting every episode before it is, basically. And that was the same with, you know, we had that when Brittany and I covered American Gods. We have that for many shows on Hyperbole. The reason I am speaking about that is because we talked about some stuff for episode 1 that was then kind of contradicted by Jeff in his Twitter Q&A the night the premiere aired. So we had already discussed it and then he kind of confirmed differently, which is fine. Like, but I just wanted to make clear that we saw all of that. We saw that news. We're not like ignoring news that has come out. The news had not come out when we recorded the episode, if that makes sense. So like, I know someone mentioned the Isaac, like, cause Jeff confirmed that or said that Daniel Sharman wasn't coming back as Isaac during that fan Twitter Q&A before the premiere, and we had released an episode after the premiere saying, oh my god, I so hope Isaac comes back, like ignoring that this had happened. It wasn't ignoring that that had happened, it was recorded before that had happened, if that makes sense. So,
and I'm still holding out hope. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe you, Jeff. I'm still hoping Sharman shows up. I need some Isaac. Yeah,
maybe this is a red herring.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically the reason that we're not responding to or reading the feedback for the episode that's just aired, like the reason we're not like, here's some thoughts about episode 2 is because you guys, we're recording this, you guys haven't seen it and we don't have those comments from you. So the feedback's sort of going to be a week behind. If we do accidentally be like, oh, isn't it nice that so-and-so has done something and then by the time you hear it that person has done something else, we really apologize for that, but we will try and do our best to keep the conversation relevant despite it not happening while the episode airs. So there was a couple of really nice comments though about episode 1. So we have one from Gwendolyn 2984. These are about episodes, sorry, not one, episode 611. Love the Derek and Styles FBI connection. Intrigued by the new mystery. Malia is my favorite. Sad Liam is hilarious. Also, coach! Exclamation mark. So true. Andre underscore music lover, music with a one lover. You know who you are. Stop accusing Derek of murders. He didn't commit 20K 11 to 20K forever. So yes, that's true. We are back to where we started with that whole issue. Nikki Florence, mostly just intrigued by the Derek plot, in love with Malia, gushing over FBI Styles and scared of whatever they've started in 6A. So really similar responses to a lot of the episode, basically, a lot of the episode last week. So that is, at least all of our people are all on the same page. That's good. And there was a couple of nice comments about us too. So I'll just... Little comment thread from Andrea B saying, just started listening to another Teen Wolf podcast, and I agree with Karen. Stop saying that, please. That was about me making a fuss of the show.
Ending. The final season.
Anyway, happy I can listen to you because I can feel the love for the show so much, and it's what I still feel too. You guys are kind of a safe haven in the midst of so many people who try to find negatives. So thank you, and two kissy faces.
Aww.
That's kind.
Yeah, we try very hard to be that place.
Yeah. The person who, not called out, the person who unwittingly corrected us about the Isaac Jeff conversation also said, her name was Starter Frenzy, also said, okay, that makes sense when I said we'd record. Hope you're right. I would prefer being tricked by Jeff than never see a new Isaac scene.
Yeah.
So I think that we agree with that. So, oh, and also my chat about Colton, Matthew Tadros said, I ran into Colton a couple of months ago at a restaurant, and I have to agree, he's one of the sweetest people I've ever met. He took the time to talk and genuinely get to know me despite the fact I was essentially interrupting his dinner. Genuinely nice guy, which Aww. Is very sweet to hear because I found him shockingly kind, as I said. Like, not that I'm, like, surprised that any human being is kind, but many aren't, and many, many people phone it in. Many people have a facade, especially when they're in the public eye. He had an element of kindness that I was not expecting. And I mean, like, not like for a celebrity, like for a human being. Like, it was really very nice. So I'm glad that he was also nice to people who bumped into him in randomly in public and interrupted his dinner. So that's also seems to be just a factor of Colton. So I'm really excited to hear more from him later.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. That's some of the comments that we had this
Yay. Week. Yay. Thank you guys again for listening to us. We always appreciate it. And leave us more feedback so we can read it out next time.
Yay. Mm-hmm. So next week is episode 13, and it's the episode mm-hmm. that one Mr. Tyler Posey directed.
Yes. Very excited.
And we have a semi-surprise for you. No, Tyler is not coming on the podcast.
I was like, what's the surprise? Did you not tell me something? I remember now.
No. Yeah, so we have a little bit of a different format for the episode next week. We'll also have a bit of a normal discussion, but a large part of the body of the podcast next week is going to be just something that we have never done before and that we did together in person at Comic-Con. So you will hear that next week. So I'm quite excited for that.
Yay.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.